not just in the form of the Muslim ban, but in the form of the last 15 years.
We say no to fear. We say no to deportation. We say no to a Muslim ban. We say no to health care repeal. We say no to a wall. We say no to Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. We say no to white supremacy. We say no to destroying unions. And we say no to voter suppression.
Welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital, produced for WPFW Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C. I'm Esther Averam. Well, this week, as President Trump made his first address to a joint session of Congress and received rave reviews from corporate media, including from Van Jones, of all people, the grassroots resistance to Trump is still rolling deep here in D.C. Later in the show, we'll hear voices among the broad coalition of activists, including the actress and comedian Rosie O'Donnell, deliver what they call their resistance address in front of the White House as Trump prepared to give his address before Congress. But first, our headlines, and Gerald Horn will Skype in. Attorney General Jeff Sessions made news yesterday when he recused himself from any investigation of contact between Russia and the Trump election campaign. He made the decision after Speaker of the House Paul Ryan asked him to recuse himself, and hundreds rallied in front of the Department of Justice in a noontime rally. Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, Democrat of Texas, was one of the elected officials who told the crowd that Sessions must resign, not just recuse himself.
Let me share with you a little document called the Constitution. Let me acknowledge that as the executive, those individuals are sworn by oath to uphold the laws of the United States of America.
They work for us.
The Attorney General of the United States is the chief legal officer of the people of the United States. He is not the counsel to the president. The Attorney General is to uphold the laws. He is to respect the most vulnerable. He is to fight for civil rights. He is to stand in the gap against hate crimes. And yet, we have an individual who was sworn in his testimony, who by actual video and voice told Senator Franken the complete opposite, gave false testimony. That is a potential breach of the law. As the chief legal officer, you cannot maintain your position by breaching the law. False testimony counters any right you have to remain as Attorney General of the United States of America. We already know that there is a litany of accusations that the Republicans have refused to investigate on President Trump. As a senior member of the Judiciary Committee, over and over we have recounted through an inquiry that we did on Tuesday all of the violations under the Emolument Clause, all of the money grabbing, all of the Trump hotels, all of the business deals. All of that is illegal as it relates to the Constitution of the United States. We will be sending a letter to President Trump asking him to seek the resignation of his Attorney General or fire him right on the spot.
Representative Lee was one of few speakers at yesterday's rally in D.C. to refer to Sessions' record of racism, including his opposition to the Voting Rights Act. But at the same time that rally was happening, hundreds were gathering in Selma, Alabama for the annual commemoration of the 1965 March for Voting Rights, known as Bloody Sunday. Lydia Curtis filed this report.
I am here at the foot of the Edmund Pettus Bridge. This is the site where, 52 years ago, citizens of Selma, Alabama, many of them in their teens and 20s, were attacked by the Alabama State Police while peacefully protesting for their right to vote. Among them were John Lewis and Amelia Boynton. Both suffered severe head injuries. Lewis became a congressman in 1987, and Amelia Boynton mentored national civil rights leaders. She also led voter registration drives for decades. Hundreds of others were injured on that day. And on the next day, Reverend James Reeb was killed by the Ku Klux Klan. I am waiting for the kickoff of 5 days of commemorative activities. On the corner where I am standing is the National Park Service in Selma Interpretive Museum that captures the history of the Selma to Montgomery marches. Across the bridge is the Voting Rights Museum, run by Sister Fire Rose Touré. I asked people why they were here.
I'm Candace Cutaway, a native of Selma, Alabama, and I am a graduate of the public school system here in addition to a school teacher here in the city of Selma. And I find it very urgent that as a millennial that I remain active in my community and participate in the Bridge Crossing Jubilee, because it's very important that we know from whence we've come and we really understand and appreciate the struggle so that we can know how to handle the things in which we go to today. Because there's such parallels in what happened then, what happened now. And at some point, we have to come together as a community and recognize those parallels and organize and really strategically figure out how to address that.
People from across the nation come to Selma as a pilgrimage. The streets and churches fill to overflowing every year for the Jubilee weekend and reenactment of the Bloody Sunday March, which takes place on Sunday at 2:30. This is Lydia Curtis in Selma, Alabama.
Well, to help us unpack another tumultuous week here in D.C. is the author and activist Professor Gerald Horn. Well, Gerald, rallies in D.C. this week reinforced for me the fact that there's a big difference between progressives and establishment Democrats right now. Even in the push to have Sessions resign, I noticed at the rally yesterday, Democrats were speaking, still trying to prove that they lost the election because of alleged Russian interference rather than because of their own failures. And progressives were at least talking about Sessions being unqualified because of his racism, his opposition to the Voting Rights Act, and they're a lot of fighting on a lot of different fronts, you know, immigration, the environment, healthcare. So, I don't know, there's so much happened this week, his speech. So what's your reaction to this week in general?
Well, first of all, with regard to the election to head the Democratic National Committee, I think it's also fair to say that there was a split between progressives and more establishment types, insofar as the latter prevailed when Tom Perez, the former Secretary of Labor under Obama, prevailed over Congressman Keith Ellison. One of the unspoken reasons why Keith Ellison lost was because of his support of Palestinian rights.
Right.
And the Israeli lobby forces threatened to rebel if he were elected. Alan Dershowitz, the hack lawyer, said that he would resign and turn his back on the Democratic Party if Keith Ellison were elected. And that was just one sign amongst many as to why he did not prevail. But with regard to Jeff Sessions, I think that it's apparent that he lied to Congress. He might have committed perjury. There is an epidemic of lying to Congress, and if Congress has any gumption, they will push to make an example of Jeff Sessions. Just in the last few weeks, you saw that Scott Pruitt, the EPA administrator, lied to Congress about not having a private email account. You saw that Tom Price, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, lied about the sweetheart deal that he engaged in while he was a member of Congress to profit handsomely. And you saw that Steve Mnuchin, the Secretary of Treasury, also lied with regard to bank foreclosures. And then going back to the Obama administration, you saw that the intelligence leader, Jim Clapper, lied about not collecting data on U.S. nationals, and then the Edward Snowden revelations revealed that to be a bald-faced lie. So at some point, Congress is going to have to put its foot down.
Oh. Well, also related to Sessions and kind of flying under the radar were his comments this week about the Department of Justice, quote, backing away from holding police departments accountable. I have a clip of him speaking at the DOJ, and I guess this was a Black History Month program on Tuesday.
We need, so far as we can, in my view, help police departments get better, not diminish their effectiveness. And I'm afraid we've done some of that. So we're going to try to pull back on this. And I don't think it's wrong or mean or insensitive to civil rights or human rights. I think it's out of a concern to make the lives of people, in particular the poor communities, minority communities, live a safer, happier life.
live a safer, happier life. What was your reaction to that, Gerald?
Well, you need to juxtapose Jeff Sessions' remarks threatening to call off the dogs of the Justice Department against police departments with the remarks by his boss, President Trump, at his address before Congress, where he tried to pit the black community against the Latino community by pointing to the tragedy of the black athlete and scholar Jamil Shaw in Los Angeles, who was killed supposedly by an undocumented Latino migrant. In other words, instead of black people being frightened and terrified, as they should be, by a reign of terror inflicted by the police departments from the Atlantic to the Pacific, we should be terrified, according to President Trump, by the fact that people from Mexico are crossing the border. This is outrageous. It's a obvious attempt to split the working class, to foment black-brown disunity, but I dare say that it will not work.
The other thing that happened, I guess, highlighted in his speech was this repeated effort to raise the military budget tremendously while cutting the budgets for agencies like the EPA. Winona Howder, she's actually included in the among the speakers later in the show, she released a statement saying that Trump's first address to Congress highlighted his plan to bring back dirty coal and let Wall Street take over the rebuilding of our infrastructure, but skipped over his efforts to gut the EPA and undo the regulations meant to protect our food, water, and environment. She said that Trump's plan is dangerous for our country. It means more communities with poisoned drinking water like Flint, children breathing toxic air from fracking wells next to their schools, and unchecked use of cancer-causing pesticides on our food. What was your take on his comments about the EPA?
Well, obviously, that speaker you just quoted is spot on. We're envisioning a future of dirtier water and dirtier air. But we also should focus on this $54 billion increase for the Pentagon budget. Already, the United States spends more on the military than the seven largest nations after the United States combined. We need to realize that this is ominous in light of Mr. Trump's pre-November remarks about ratcheting up conflict with Iran. It's fair to say that if his plans for raising the Pentagon budget comes to fruition, that we should expect a shooting war or some sort of conflict with Iran sooner rather than later.
I can't help but think about when I hear about a budget increase like that and also his recent idea to, you know, increase this massive force of deportation force, like immigration police, that this is like a jobs program for him, that he's envisioning this is a way to give jobs to many of his supporters. I think that most jobs in the military and the police forces, they go disproportionately to men. They seem to go disproportionately to white men. And this is a population that's, you know, supported him tremendously. And knowing the history of like militarization and how people go along with authoritarianism because it's their job to, you know, it is very frightening to me. Not frightening in the sense that makes me scared, but it's frightening for the country.
Well, you are correct. You also need to realize that since President Trump was elected in November 2016, the stocks of private prison corporations have gone through the roof. They not only expect to be housing, shall we say, the thousands, if not millions, of undocumented workers who are slated to be deported, but I think that U.S. citizens as well should expect to be housed in these private prisons as well. With regard to your point concerning the military spending being a kind of jobs program, well, it's well known that for decades, U.S. imperialism has engaged in what has been called military Keynesianism, after the British economist John Keynes, who suggested that in order to bring capitalist economies out of recession and depression, the government needs to engage in spending. Now, of course, as a social democrat, he would have suggested spending on education and healthcare. But Trump is the furthest thing from a social democrat one can imagine. So he's going to be spending our tax dollars on private prisons and on rockets and on missiles.
So I'd like to end with your little known news for this week. What are your ideas on what we haven't been hearing in the news?
Well, I remember after September 11, 2001, the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, that I expected the media to be talking about how this was a direct result of U.S. policy during the Cold War in aligning with religious zealots, and now, like a Frankenstein monster, they had turned on U.S. imperialism. But that was not the dominant narrative coming forth. After Mr. Trump was elected, I expected the media, or at least some on the left, to be talking about how Mr. Trump's election was a direct result of the Cold War and the Red Scare once again. That is to say that after 1945, the United States began to squash left-wing trade unions like the National Maritime Union, the International Longshore and Warehousemen's Union, and that put the working class in a position not to be able to fight for higher wages and better working conditions. Now, this happened simultaneously with granting certain anti-Jim Crow concessions to black workers and brown workers in particular, which allowed the demagogues to suggest that black workers and brown workers were advancing while white workers were retreating. And it was out of that maelstrom that Donald J. Trump was elected. So once again, you can see that the Cold War and the Red Scare are still working its dastardly magic. But once again, we don't see this sort of narrative emerging from the mainstream press.
Well, I've been speaking with Professor Gerald Horn, whose most recent book is Paul Robeson, The Artist as Revolutionary. But he actually has many new books, titles coming out this year. What book is coming out next, Gerald?
Well, I have a book on the black press coming out in August, and then I have a book on Afro-Asian solidarity, which I think has new information about the internment of Japanese and Japanese Americans during World War II coming out after that. Then I have a book on black Americans aviation coming out after that, and then a book on 17th century slavery coming out by the end of the year.
Wow. Well, that's quite a bit, and I'm sure we'll be talking about them as the months go on. Thank you, Gerald.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, finally, in culture and media, the horror comedy Get Out about racism in liberal suburbia topped the box office last week and also topped critics' lists. Today, the movie Logan, the latest in the X-Men series, is in theaters. Beginning on Tuesday, March 7th, Native nations from across the U.S. will arrive here in D.C. to demand that inherent rights of Native people to protect homelands, communities, laws, and cultures for future generations be recognized. They will set up a teepee city on the National Mall and stage several actions culminating in a mass march on March 10th. Check out Native Nations Rise, nativenationsrise.org for more information. And those are our headlines and happenings. When we come back, voices of those hardy protesters who braved the heavy rain Tuesday night here in D.C. to speak to the American people when Trump was speaking to Congress. Stay with us.
Larry Cohen, make some noise!
We have a message tonight for Donald Trump that whether it's raining or snowing, no matter what time it is, whether it's at the airport or the White House, we're ready across this country. And we are standing up and we are fighting back, and we won't stop until we stop him. I'm proud to be up here with Food and Water Watch, environmentalists, sisters and brothers from Standing Rock, and this giant coalition that has been working together, particularly since November the 9th, when we said, in the words of Mother Jones, don't mourn, organize. We're here in the spirit of millions of women and still following their leadership. We're here in the spirit of millions of immigrants who walked off the job and following their leadership. We're here in the spirit of working class Americans, whether they're black, brown, or white, that are ready to fight for their kids and their parents and their health care and their jobs and their union. But we're also fighting forward as we resist, and that is our word tonight. That's an historic word from the civil rights movement, from other nations, from years way before the oldest of us. We don't take the word resistance lightly. We know what it means when we say we will resist. It means that if they come for an immigrant and I'm not an immigrant, I will stand there and they'll have to take me first. That's resistance. It means that if they try to target Muslims and I'm not a Muslim, I'll be a Muslim and I'll register. But we're also learning how to build our movement. Those of us who were in the Bernie campaign helped build a mass movement. But we also learned that even though there were millions of us, 13 million in that movement, and we move on through our revolution, we need millions more. And we need to learn how we organize millions more. As my brother Keith Ellison would say, in all 3,143 counties, we are organizing not just in places like D.C., but across this nation. And we're organizing around a positive view of the future, not just no cuts to Medicare, but Medicare for all. Not just protecting the education that we have from the worst education commissioner in history, who got confirmed by one vote, the vice president breaking a tie, because of our resistance. But we're fighting forward. We're fighting for a time when every kid born has free preschool, and when they go to college, they don't pay for tuition. That's what we're fighting for. We're fighting against DeVos, but we're fighting for education for all and health care for all. And so as we resist Donald Trump's State of the Union, as we resist his words meant to trick us up while he puts billionaires around him, while he believes that billionaires should be ruling us just like the ruling class, as we resist him tonight, we look around at our sisters and brothers here and across the country, and we know that love trumps hate. And we know that our positive vision of the future will lead to victory as long as it takes, as we say in labor, how long? One day longer. How long?
One day longer.
How long?
One day longer.
How long?
One day longer.
And each day stronger. So great to be out here with you. And what we will always do, Donald Trump, as you attack, we will stand up and fight back.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jordan Marie Daniel, member of Culichasha, Oyate, Lower Bull Sioux Tribe in Central South Dakota, right on the Missouri River. Thank you all for being here despite the weather, but how convenient that, you know, for Indigenous people, our main message is Mini Wachoni, water is life, and we are being blessed with the rain right now. So thank you very much for being here. So this is what resistance is looking like and what it's becoming, and all these people from different groups all over the world are uniting and are standing up to this government to protect and defend our rights, and we deserve what's best. Indigenous people have been surviving 500 plus years of colonization and attempts to exterminate us, and we have resisted 500 plus years. I am an example of that. Lance is an example of that. Other Indigenous people here that are on the stage with me are an example of that. We've survived, and we are still here. We haven't gone anywhere. So our main fight right now is for our indigenous rights and tribal sovereignty. That's what we are rising up right now. Our native youth are taking a stand. They ran from Cannonball, North Dakota, all the way to D.C. to oppose a pipeline because it was going to threaten their water source. It was going to threaten their way of life. And that's what we are rising up to do, is to protect our indigenous rights and our tribal sovereignty. And we want a seat at the table. We want to be looked at. We want to be thought of. We want to be involved in every single conversation when it comes to terms with legislative policies. We deserve that right. We have been here since the beginning. And currently right now, you know, the main fight is to stop this pipeline and to stop other potential pipelines such as like Keystone XL. With the memorandums that were signed day four into this administration, that was almost like a declare of war on tribal communities, basically dehumanizing us and devaluing us and expediting the approval to go through with this construction without proper consultation. And it's a violation of against human rights, it's a violation against the legal process and the protocol, and without a full implementation of an environmental impact statement. But we are rising up. We are organizing in our communities all across Turtle Island and all across the world. We are showing up in court, holding our government accountable, and we are holding our congressional members accountable by continuing to be a voice. And you know, right now, with what Standing Rock created, it created the biggest indigenous movement that we've seen in modern day history. We have so many nations coming together and so many allies because of it. And I thank you all for your support. And I know the indigenous people of Turtle Island and everywhere appreciate your support as well. So keep standing with us, march with us, come to our rallies. Rising Hearts Coalition is here in DC. We are a women indigenous led organization helping to amplify the indigenous voice and representation here in DC, because our voices matter and we need to be heard. I just want to thank you all, and I want to invite you next week. We have a big week here in DC where indigenous people from all over the place are coming here to unite and to be a voice and to march on Washington. Native Nations March on Washington, March 10th, next Friday, 10 a.m. We're going to be meeting at the Army Corps National Headquarters. Please show up in solidarity, march with us to the White House, and be a voice. Let's make some noise. So I just want to end with just a real quick chant, one that's really united and has brought happiness to people who have been involved in this movement, and it started with our International Indigenous Youth Council. So when I say it, I would love for you to repeat it right after me, okay? We stand!
We stand!
For our brothers!
For our brothers!
For our sisters!
For our sisters!
We stand!
We stand!
For the land!
For the land!
For the water!
For the water!
We stand!
We stand!
For all nations!
For all nations!
We stand!
We stand!
We stand!
We stand!
We stand!
We stand!
Thank you!
Thank you!
Alright. So coming up right now, because demonstration without legislation leads to frustration. And demonstration without litigation also leads to frustration. And one of those organizations that has been on the front lines in the streets and in the suites and in the courtroom, making sure that there is no ban and no wall, is ACLU. So make some noise right now for Faz Shakir from ACLU. Give it up!
Damn, you're good at that. But some rain is not going to stop our fight for freedom, right? I'm Faz Shakir. I'm the political director of the ACLU. I'm proud to be here with you tonight. We're an organization that is passionately committed to defending the Constitution and our Bill of Rights. And as President Trump goes about trying to violate our freedoms, we've had a simple message for him: see you in court. And And we've been pretty good so far. We've had some good success. I hope he enjoys losing. He's going to keep losing. We're going to go. He's going to lose so much, we're going to get sick and tired of his losing. Listen, our fight is not just in the court of law, it's also in the court of public opinion. When we take our legal power and we add people power, that's our formula for victory. And we are facing the greatest threat to our civil liberties in our lifetime. When you look at what Donald Trump has told the most vulnerable people in our population, think about it. He said to them, we want to deport you, we want to detain you, we want to call you guilty without due process, we want to torture you, we want to take your land and water, we want to tell you which bathroom you can use, we'll stop you from voting, we'll take away your health care, we'll tell you which health care decisions to make. That's what he's telling some of our most vulnerable people in our population. These fights are unified. If this isn't a one for all for one moment, I don't know what is. Our strength is our unity, and I want to thank you for standing with the ACLU. The ACLU will stand up for you. Thank you.
So one of the honors that I have at the Hip Hop Caucus, for those who got it came late, my name is Rev Yearwood. I'm president of the Hip Hop Caucus. And one of the things that we know is that you have to be in a part where culture is out front in our movement. They're very important for this process. We've seen that from Harry Brother Fox and Eartha Kitt. We've seen those who have been on the front lines. We even see today from so many artists who recognize, they say that we must not just get behind the camera or in front of the camera, but we must also lead. And this amazing person has been doing that. She's been doing it through comedy. She's been doing it through making sure her voice is heard. And even she's the one who took this president to task, toe to toe. And so she's even out here in the rain, because where she could be in the shelter, she's in the rain because she understands that this moment is our moment and we must stand up. So make some noise. Get loud. Get excited for the one, the only, Rosie O'Donnell.
This is Donald Trump math, ladies and gentlemen. You say it, the media buys it. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. And whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter and abolish it and to institute new government. That is why we are here. This is not Russia. To Donald Trump and his pathetic band of white, privileged, criminal businessmen, I would like to say to him, niet, sir, niet, niet, niet. No, we won't. We've seen what you have done, sir. We have seen your connections with Russia. The game is over. The internet rules. All media is universal. The truth matters, even if our major media companies will not call him a liar. We will. He lies. He lies. He lies. He lies. And it's about time they all started saying that instead of it appears as if he hasn't been speaking the truth. Cut it down to the least common denominator like he does. I got a very good presidency, really good idea. this idea is good. It's bigly and good, and lots of people are talking about it. It's a bigly good idea. Well, tell that to Ryan Owen's father, sir.
Yes. Yes.
How dare you, Donald Trump? This is America. It is not yours. It is not corporately owned. It is of the people, by the people, and for the people. And we, the people, will not stand for it. He has degraded and bullied women his entire life and career. The President of the United States has been accused of rape many, many times. Report that, newspapers. That's the fact, Jack. That's how we're going to go from now on, down and dirty like Donald Trump. No big words, just the truth. And you know what the truth is? A very handsome conservative man stopped me on my way up with his iPhone to ask me with his charming Irish 30-year-old face if George Soros had paid me to come here. And I said, sir, I have never met George Soros, but he seems like a lovely man. One day I'd like to share a souvlaki with him. I've only met your friend Donald two times. Once at his wedding to Marla Maples, where he shook the hands of the guests at the wedding as he walked down the aisle to take his vows. Warning, 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 Will Robinson. And one other time at a game show. I don't know him. I know he's a bully. He's a mean man. He hates women. He's taken away women's rights, and we will not stand for it. I'm here with the ACLU. I'm here with the NAACP. I'm here with Flint, Michigan, and clean water for every American. I am here with you, because we, the people, will get him out. Thank you, peace, and don't fear the rain. We have many speakers. I'm staying, and I'll be back later to lead a sing-along. Come back. Here we go. Thank you for having me. Peace out, and we will no more war for the USA. No more making war on other people's countries. No more doing that, Donald. Thank you very much.
One more time. Give it up for Rosie O'Donnell. We're gonna keep this going right now, but this is important because one of the things here that's important that we're dealing with today is that you heard Rosie mention Flint, Michigan, and the fact today that we can roll back the Clean Water Act, and folks in Flint still don't have clean water. The fact that we can roll back the Clean Air Act, and we have so many children, particularly black and brown children, who are dealing with asthma. And so we must push forth, I don't care who you are, Republican or Democrat. This is about humanity. This is about truly being American. And so with that, please give it up for Food Water Watch, Winona Halter. Come on, help me demand now. One more time, y'all. Make some noise.
Donald Trump has declared war on the environment and on the people of this nation. He has nominated people who have closer relationships to the fossil fuel industry than ever before in history. Rex Tillerson, former Exxon Mobil CEO. Scott Pruitt leading the EPA when he sued it 14 times. These are dangerous people, and we are here to say we're not going to let it happen. We are going to raise our voices together. We're going to resist. We're going to protect. We're going to rebuild. We are going to make sure that the money that Trump wants to waste on the military is not spent in ways that hurts people. In fact, if the $25 billion that Trump wants to spend on the wall was spent to really protect Americans, it could be used to replace 5 out of 6 lead service pipes that are poisoning as many as 22 million American families. We have had enough. This is all about coming together. We saw the Women's March energize people. We're going to have the Standing Rock Sioux on March 10th. We're going to have the Scientist March on April 22nd. We're going to have the People's Climate March on April 29th. We want everybody to come out, and we have to do more. We need to hold our senators accountable. We need to work towards the 2018 elections. We need to amplify Americans' voices and get them involved in protecting and rebuilding our democracy.
You are listening to Voices from an Action called the Resistance Address, held on Tuesday, February 28, 2017, across from the White House, as President Trump prepared to give his first address to a joint session of Congress. This is On the Ground on Pacifica Radio. Now back to the Resistance Address.
So I want to bring up here Dr. Maher. Can you come up here? She is an amazing doctor. And she is going to speak to, she's going to speak to for the condition that is happening for our Muslim brothers and sisters. So please, not only give her the love, but for all Muslims, give them the love right now. Bye.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you all for being here. Thank you, Rev, for the introduction. I'm here today because I'm Muslim. I'm here because Muslims stand for justice. I'm here because President Trump has decided to criminalize and demonize an entire faith. I'm here because President Trump implemented one Muslim ban and now is about to put into place another Muslim ban. And make no mistake, for those that are not convinced that this is a Muslim ban, it is a Muslim ban. 6 out of 7 of the countries that were on the initial ban were countries that the U.S. was bombing. But yet, we're taught to fear the people from those countries when they should be fearing us because we are bombing them. So we need to send a message to President Trump that we will refuse to bow down, that we will refuse to cower. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that the war on terror, which President Trump is building off from, is a set of policies that were implemented under Bush and continued by Obama. So we're not just talking about President Trump. We're talking about U.S. imperialism, colonialism, and state violence that has targeted Muslims, not just in the form of the Muslim ban, but in the form of the last 15 years. And so we need to be here day in and day out to resist. We need to let President Trump know that we are going to refuse to be mistreated, that we're going to be refused to be maligned. And I hope he hears this message. And as a Muslim, I stand in solidarity with my black and brown brothers and sisters. We are all in this struggle together. And none of us will win until all of us win. So we must win together. So I'm from the DC Justice for Muslims Coalition. I encourage you to get involved. Our goal and mission is to dismantle institutionalized Islamophobia. To dismantle structural Islamophobia.
Yes.
and to rid the United States once and for all the systems of oppression that target various marginalized groups in this country. So I hope you'll join us in this fight.
Yeah.
And I want to end with a chant. When Muslim rights are under attack, what do?
Stand up, fight back.
When Muslim rights are under attack, what do?
Stand up, fight back.
When Muslim rights are under attack, what do?
Stand up, fight back.
Thank you so much.
Can I hear you?
No man, no wall.
Can I hear you?
No man, no wall.
Can I hear you?
No man, no wall.
I had the pleasure just now of meeting, and I hope I don't get her name wrong, Marianne Ingram. I believe that's right. A Holocaust survivor. And she pulled me to the side. She's on the side over there. Two. It would be your left, my right, and she just told me that she's been protesting because she knows what fascism looks like. Now that's an amazing thing. When you have somebody who actually survived the Holocaust over there, and she was standing there strong in the rain, talking about why we need to stand here. And that's so important because we just heard my dear sister tell us about why it's so important to show our love for our Muslim brothers and sisters. At the same time, we have those who will go out here and desecrate Jewish synagogues in just a horrible fashion. And that just amazes me that me just saying that, which was so easy out of the love, me being a reverend, a Christian, having to love my Muslim and my Jordan sisters, that should be something that should be the American way, but it's not. We are silent, but we here will not be silent. So for all those who continue to want to pick on those who are coming here as immigrants, those who are Muslim, those who are Jewish, those who are poor, those who want to be bullies, those who say that this will make America great again, that will not make America great at all!
Love, not hate, makes America great!
Love,
not hate, makes America great! Love, not hate, makes America great!
With that, I want to bring from Ben the Harper.
So yesterday I received an email from the principal of my first grade son's school informing us about the bomb threats that had been phoned in to Jewish schools across the country. And I will say that the Jewish community is reeling right now. Over 90 such threats made, but that's within the context of thousands of hate incidents across the country. This isn't about one community, it's about all of us. And while the president was finally embarrassed into mouthing the words root out hate and prejudice and evil, we challenge him to back up those words with actions. Mr. President, fire Steve Bannon. Yeah. Mr. President, direct Jeff Sessions to stop voter suppression across the country that we know targets communities of color specifically. Stop targeting immigrants and stop scaling up for mass deportations. Do not allow religion to be an excuse for the targeting of the LGBT community, of women, of transgender school kids. Because the God I believe in does not stand on the side of Pharaoh. The The God I believe in does not prey on the vulnerable. The God I believe in stands with the orphan, the widow, and the stranger. And Mr. Trump, one more thing. This is your daily reminder that you lost the popular vote by 3 million. And you have no moral or electoral mandate to pursue the radical policies that you're pursuing. My friends, our society is undergoing a political and a moral crisis. But I believe that how we choose to respond to this moment says everything about who we are as a people, as a society, and as a nation. And the hundreds of you standing in this crowd, you are an inspiration to me and to people all over the country. Friends, we were made for this moment. These are the times when we discover who we really are, what truly matters, and what we stand for. And the only proper response to this political and moral crisis is for our society to undergo a civic and a moral reawakening, where we say no to fear. We say no to deportation. We say no to a Muslim ban. We say no to health care repeal. We say no to a wall. We say no to Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. We say no to white supremacy. We say no to destroying unions. And we say no to voter suppression. But we're not just a resistance, we are an opposition. And we say yes to immigrants. Yes. We say yes to sanctuary cities. Yes. We say yes to a living wage. Yes. We say yes to religious diversity. Yes. We say yes to health care for all.
Yes.
We say yes to solidarity.
Yes.
Yes to beloved community.
Yes.
Yes to hope.
Yes.
And yes to the future. Thank you.
I love the nurses. Let me just say that off the bat. I love the nurses. So from the National Nurses United, we're going to have first Sandra Farwell. Make some noise.
Greetings, brothers and sisters. As he said, my name is Sandy Farwell, and I'm a registered nurse here in Washington, D.C., at Children's National Medical Center in the Neonatal Intensive Care Unit. I am also a proud vice president of National Nurses United. I think you've seen us a time or two, especially with Bernie. At any rate, I'm here to tell you we're in trouble. Your health care is in trouble. If Donald and his crew do what they want to do, there'll be even more and more people with no care. We are seeing in our emergency rooms immigrants who are afraid to bring their children back because they're afraid they'll be deported. We're seeing Americans who are coming in when they're so sick it's almost irreversible because they can't afford the copay, so they wait till the last minute, and now it's a battle for their life, not just a battle for an illness. We are seeing more and more people who are just giving up. They have nothing they can do. They can't afford this industry that we call our healthcare system. Our healthcare system is broken, but we have something in place that works. It's called Medicare. We are calling for Medicare for all. It's a system that works. You can tweak it, you can fix it, but you don't have to make it. Instead, they're going to just put us out with no insurance and a possible plan, if they can come up with it. They'll give you a voucher, but if you have no money, the voucher's not going to do you any good. So, speaking for the nurses across this country, we are saying, thank Thank you for resisting. Thank you for fighting. Thank you for standing with us when we're fighting for health care. Because if you don't, we can't. Thank you.
When I say all power, you say to the people. All power.
To the people.
All power.
To the people.
All power.
To the people.
All power.
To the people.
Let's go get them, Ben. Until you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Julieta Garibay. I am the co-founder and campaign director for United We Dream, the first and largest undocumented immigrant youth-led network in this nation. I, along with many folks like myself and our membership at United We Dream and the immigrant community, are currently the target of Trump's hate and racism. We are currently the target of spineless elected officials who are not willing to stand up for love, human dignity, and justice, who are too scared or are being bullied by Trump because they think it's okay to stay quiet. I arrived here in the U.S. at the age of 12 in Austin, Texas, with my courageous Chingona mother that left everything behind to make a life here in the U.S. for my sister and I. She came here to the U.S. to build a home, to build a life, to build and provide for both of us. But most importantly, she came here running away from my abusive father, thinking that in this country, in the land of the free, we would be free and protected from our abusive father, from cops, and from immigration agents. And so we stayed here, and like many other courageous Chingones immigrants that come to this country and make it their home and create their own destiny and decide to stay here because we're here to stay. We are all those immigrants that are here right now, scared, thinking that we could be deported tomorrow. So tonight, as we hear from 45, tonight, I remind our community that we are here to stay, that immigrants are courageous, that immigrants are here to stay, even if Trump doesn't like it. I ask you to repeat after me. Say it loud, say it proud.
Say it loud, say it proud.
Immigrants, Muslims, and refugees are welcome here. Refugees are welcome here.
Immigrants, Muslims, refugees are welcome here.
And when our communities, when immigrants, when Muslims, when LGBTQ folks, when undocumented blacks are attacked by Trump and his racism, what do we do?
Stand up,
fight back. What do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
Thank you, y'all.
You've been listening to Voices from an Action called the Resistance Address, held on Tuesday, February 28, 2017, across from the White House, as President Trump prepared to give his first address to a joint session of Congress. This is On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital, produced for WPFW Pacifica Radio. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can listen to all of our shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. I'm Esther Averam. Keep raising your voice. All power to the people. Peace.